very busy day. I'm delighted to have my guest in studio as well, because it's this whole issue of mental well-being, and I'm imagining many of you will know that story and maybe have lived with that or be facing that, or maybe a member of the family or friendship circle. We've talked about it so many times, mental health problems. It can be very hard to find a way to connect with the world, or maybe just close the curtains and stay in the house. I think maybe that's the option for a lot of people. But to bring emotions back towards something resembling normality, medication can help, but many sufferers use art and creativity, and that can help people cope in some circumstances. Joining me are Paul Butterfield. He refers to himself as a bipolar poet, and the musician Chris Marsden has kindly joined us today from our Belfast studios. Here's a little bit of what he does. Chris, thank you for joining us in Belfast today. Thank you for that. Chris, well, tell us first about what we've just been listening to here. Tell us about this song.
That particular song is called Never Ending Loop, and it was written in an instant, really, in the morning that followed a night of turmoil and ruminations that are typical of what I've been categorised as suffering from, what they call pure O, form of OCD.
Pure O.
Yeah, it's like stands for pure obsessive. It's, there's different forms of OCD. Some of them would be physical, as in the common hand washing, through to checking, through to thinking you've left the cooker on or whatever. Other forms of OCD can be very incorporated in your mind, whereby you think a thought that can cause guilt, fear, anguish, shame, whatever it may be, and that thought alone goes around in your head like a loop, and what you normally try to do is, your normal human instinct is to try and resolve that fear by something that might appease the fear, and then it'll loop again and come back in minutes, you know, and you could spend like 8 to 12 hours a day in this circle.
So say the last hour, thinking about, you know, coming on the radio, would you have had to build little rituals around that?
Not necessarily, no. It's more stuff for me personally, it's things that affect me personally. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, in my early 20s, I thought I had was a potential murderer, or, you know, rapist or whatever, something that is not me and would never be me, but yet you're disgusted at the thought of that, and that disgust raises the anxiety levels that circle in a loop in your head. So, I mean, I don't necessarily suffer from nerves, so to speak, because I'm a performer and a musician. I do get stage fright, obviously, but for something like this, you know, I feel like it's my purpose, my cause. So, no, I didn't have any ruminations for this particular interview, but certainly it's a daily challenge that isn't always there, but always comes back.
But Chris, you're the only person that you know this well. I imagine there might have been years that you maybe thought nothing was up, because sure, this is the way life is, that's the way I am. And did it take it to be pointed out to you that this was a thing, that this might have been a difficulty?
I'd say it took 20 years.
Wow.
Of me thinking I was just mad, until I read literature and then realised that these patterns, these thoughts and these patterns of behaviour are very common. By reading, you know, books on OCD and going to therapy and things like this, and that did in turn help me realise that I'm not alone, and people do. It's the human brain's a brain that's made up of chemistry and connections, and these connections form similar patterns and people suffer. And until you realize that you're not alone and that, you know, this is a common thing, it can be a very dark place, you know.
But I can hear what you're saying about rituals and being, you were, I think you used the word obsessive and that. How can that bring you down? Because that, I assume your house is spotless. You know what, you know what I mean, Chris? It's like...
No, far from it.
It's the opposite.
No,
it?
It's not. It's not. There is the cleaning OCD, which is a physical OCD, but there are many, many different forms of OCD. And,
right.
And in turn, I think you can't really categorise mental illness and bracket it off.
Sure, I would never try to.
So, yeah, I don't suffer from the cleanliness thing. So my house isn't spotless, but it would be... I mean, if... Like I said, it could be something that you're jealous of, that you can't get out of your head, or, you know, maybe your partner's past relationships, or it could be something that it could be something so simple like you think you could kill a cat and you wouldn't want to go near the cat, or if there's a knife on the table, you wouldn't want to go near the knife for fear that you could lift it and hurt somebody. And that weight of anxiety that comes along with these thoughts is what causes the loop that never ends until you have to realize that it's a mental illness and not part of your person, because more often than not, it's not the case, you know.
Well, as I say, up to the mic, and yeah, we're going to chat. You speak about your own mental health in your poetry. We'll hear a little bit in a second. These things can be very difficult to understand, and I don't pretend to understand this, but at what stage did you start to understand your own story?
I had sort of been suffering with bits of mania and depression from I was 17. At 17, I kept getting really, really depressed, but I had, like, these heightened senses of energy to create and do things, you know. At the height of my mania, I actually thought that I was the second coming, that I was Jesus Christ. So that really disturbed me and made me think, you know, geez, I think there might be something wrong here. But I kind of kept going on for a couple of years. And when I was 19, I had a complete nervous breakdown. Mm-hmm. And that's landed me in the Grantcha Hospital for 2 days where I got psychiatric help. I didn't actually find out until a year and a half later that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And whenever I was diagnosed, you know, my mum, she just burst into tears, like, you know, and I didn't really know that much about it. So I decided to kind of read up on it and watch different films and stuff about bipolar and that, like, especially, you know, Stephen Fry and that. He suffers a bipolar disorder and he brought a documentary out and I watched it and that, you know. So it sort of gave me a wee bit of an insight, but I was a black belt martial artist under the name of Jeff Thompson, and I had skated from I was 12 right through to I was 22 for 10 years. I was a skateboarder and made a few films and stuff. I actually turned to writing whenever I was 17. I read two articles for a magazine, a martial arts magazine, and then when I was 19, I started looking into it more creatively. Uh-huh. So I kind of thought, well, there's no point in me really writing more like kind of stiff and rigid stuff. Maybe I could get a wee bit poetic on it. So I started writing films and poetry and things like that, and started making films and started writing poetry. And that's kind of where, just at 19, that's where everything sort of kicked off for me.
Do you think this kind of thing you're describing, is it chemical? Do you think it's just the way people are? Because you know that, or, well, I'm assuming you know that you're not Jesus. Or
No, I know that. I know, yeah, I look no, like I mean, it. But
no, they've got a fine beard. You're a, you know. I was going to use the H word, the hipster word, but, you know. does it matter to you that you understand why you thought you were Jesus?
I guess, like, I don't really know. I know that it's a chemical imbalance in the brain, just like any kind of physical or, you know, symptom like a cold or a flu, you know, there's a chemical imbalance in the body where the body starts to deteriorate and starts going through its motions. So it's the same with a mental illness. It's just a chemical imbalance that you can try and balance it back with medication and eating a certain way and drinking the right fluids and things that got there, but it's just something that you're always going to have and have to deal with for the rest of your life.
It's incredible that you and Chris are both using creativity, in your case poetry, to drive a spear into the middle of this. Some people think, oh, just pray that it goes away. You don't dig deeper into it creatively, and yet you're doing that. We have a little piece of your work here,
yeah.
Paul. It's one of your poems. Let's hear this turn.
spinning like a monstrous caged animal on his own accord, knows he has the key of heart to break free, scared to move up the hill of salvation, scared to stay in the unknocked house, fear of reversing back like a car into a crash, all because of the black cloud of fear sets in over the creature's head. Once a bird of freedom and life, now trapped with his variety of destruction. Mania sets in like a DVD on fast forward, erratically skipping from scene to scene, going through too much information of thought to process in his fine mind, feeling ready to pop like a red cherry balloon. Depression sets in, like crawling through a claustrophobic tunnel, splintered in glass and heavily liquidized with bleach. The creature performs his merely boring daily routine of little existence, fakely grinning to those he knows, lying to himself and the ones he loves, sacrificing and comforting them like a nighttime teddy bear.
The Bipolar Poet, but self-defined, Paul, there is my studio guest, Paul Butterfield. That's a great image, a DVD on fast forward. I know exactly what you're saying there. I think listeners, that stands out. Is that really what it was like living like that?
Yeah, I actually wrote that piece. I was living in a council flat. It was two bedroom and that, like, you know, and it was a pretty dark stage in my life. I had a wee desk in the corner of the room where I just literally left my book lying there. But that was actually the first poem that I actually read about the manic depression.
You see, some of the great artists have trodden a similar line to you. I think of some of the great painters, some of the very dark painters, like a Bacon and all the rest. I mean, fantastic work, but some might argue that the deeper you dig into this, you might become a better poet, but you're digging deep into darkness, Paul, and maybe the artistic approach maybe isn't healthy.
It's certainly a cathartic experience for me. It's a way of communicating emotions that you wouldn't maybe necessarily be able to do if you were just, you know, talking to someone. If you're,
it's best to get it out.
Certainly is, yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah, I mean, the stuff I'm working on at the minute is basically a lot of themes incorporate images similar to the poetry there, which was fantastic.
Thanks.
Like, there's a song called My Number Nine, and it's sort of a bit like the cat with nine lives. You constantly feel like you're on your final life, and when you're in it, it's so enormously intense that you don't see another way out. And
it strikes me that both of you have tied almost as well, Chris, into kind of, call it a confessional tradition. Maybe no accident that method has worked for religions down the aeons, but maybe there's a confessional thing here, is there?
It is. I definitely, it's you're being a confessional artist, like poets like Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton. They were in their day called confessional poets, so you are confessing. You know, there is a really beautiful line that I just wrote there the other day. I need substance, otherwise I dissolve. So writing the poetry or doing the music and things like that, or any art form at all, it's about having substance and clarifying it, because otherwise if you don't have it, you just completely dissolve, you know. So I think that's a beautiful thing to have.
Yeah, I would agree, definitely.
Yeah.
A lot of the famous musicians, artists, poets, playwrights, you know, it's no secret that a big part of what they go through is what contributes to their art, you know.
But we talk about Sylvia, fellas, you know, Sylvia had a sad end. I mean, that's the point I'm trying to make here, that you can wrestle like a good thing every day of your life.
It's being a warrior, you know. It's about taking in all the natural ingredients that you have for your art, but not just being a good artist, but being a good human being as well. I sort of like someone like Allen Ginsberg, was a poet and a prophet. That's what I kind of guide my lines on as well. I don't just, you know, do the poetry. I also help to guide people that are suffering from mental illnesses. Like, I did a level 4 counselling course there a couple of years ago, and I did that to understand more about myself and to understand more about mental illness, so that I could carry that on.
Paul Butterfield, Paul, just
people, especially myself, mainly. And
you see, there's another dichotomy there as well. This is clearly for you, but this has also now become about readers and reputation. And you know, is he a good poet? Is he a bad poet? Then, you know, suddenly you're up for inspection creatively.
Yeah, it's more about influence. You know, you're leaving an influence behind. And in a sense, like I've written a wee poem, it's about helping people to walk in your shoes. That's all that it is. You know, these are wee poetic stories, or like with the music and things. It's just poetic stories, and you're helping people to walk in your shoes of how you see, feel, taste, touch everything about your life, and you're just sharing it with the public, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. It's amazing. That song, Never Ending Loop, you know, I posted it on an OCD forum site about a year ago, and only recently I found it on Google that someone had gone through her music collection and couldn't find anything that she could relate her emotions to, and I was really chuffed that she found my song and reposted it. And
oh, that's beautiful.
It just shows that, you know, it's out there to be found, and if it helps at least one person,
yeah,
that's better than any review or critique or anything for me personally anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I think it takes great courage to do what you two are doing, you know, because I think at best you could talk about this and go through the formulaic understanding of it, but your two men are, you know, you're speaking from the heart.
Yeah,
it,
like,
courage, man.
I got an email from a girl there a few months back, and she also was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. She was just looking up bipolar on the internet, and my website actually came up, and she flicked through everything to do with my story, with the documentary, with the poetry films and videos and stuff, and she actually emailed me just saying thank you so much for letting me know that I'm not alone.
Fellas, what about medication? I don't diss medication for a second, but a lot of people now, and I'll come to Grania here in studio in a wee second from Aware Defeat. Chris, have you thoughts on that? Because I've heard medical people say on and off the record that we medicate too much these days. Everybody gets medicated out of their brains just to knock people out. And I'm sure you have your thoughts on that, do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I started medication some time ago, maybe 10 years. And it has helped. It's more like an oil that helps the gear to shift. So you don't get stuck in a thought. I mean, there are positives and there are certainly negatives, don't get me wrong. Medication's not for everybody, and it certainly isn't for me a lot of the time either, because once you're on it, it's very difficult to get off it without the proper therapy. Certainly medication alone is not the answer. You need to have some form of mindfulness or therapy to accompany that. If anything, the medication's there to lessen the severity of the anxiety.
Yeah, definitely. I do agree, because like my mentor Jeff Thompson always talks to me about palate. What you eat and what you drink is a major play in what you do, and also getting the right exercise and being around good people, great people, you know, other artists or just family and friends, or being in a loving relationship. I have a beautiful dog called Candy, and I walk her every single morning, you know, and that keeps me fit.
Those are great.
You know, they definitely are, and I really try to, you know, be strict in what I eat and what I drink, and that, like, the medication definitely helps. I wouldn't be able to cope without my medication, because I take diazepam. I have an anxiety experience that actually, you know, the scene in Batman Begins where the lights in the eyes are, like, really funky?
Wow.
It goes like that. And if I didn't have the diazepam, the anti-anxiety medication, I used to actually hide in my room. And I could either last for an hour, or could end up lasting for 6 hours, but I would literally hide under the quilt because I couldn't open my eyes because it was so vibrant. And once I got the medication, it really helped to calm that experience down. I know it's sedative medication, but it helps with the process of what I'm going through. So yeah, I'm grateful of the medication.
Grania McInnee is in studio listening from Aware Defeat Depression. Grania, two very brave chaps.
Absolutely, Mark. And thank you for doing this, discussing this on the programme. Thank you to Chris and to Paul. And I absolutely loved listening to the words of both gentlemen. And just some things I wanted to address there, Mark, when you were saying about, you know, the dangers maybe of bringing this to the fore. And something we always say about our feelings, if we bury our feelings, we tend to bury them alive. Mm-hmm. The feelings can be there that we struggle with, whether we express them or not. And I think been able to express how you're feeling, I mean, in my own personal journey, words, I would say, were part of what saved my life.
And yet our grandparents would not have understood this conversation.
Absolutely.
What are you telling everybody about your problem? What?
Absolutely.
Tell that to the family, never mind the boys in the radio.
The BT campaign, it is good to talk. And the liberation and the freedom that we get from expressing ourselves, whether we use it in words, whether it's a piece of art, whether it's a piece of poetry, a piece of beautiful music. And we talked there about mindfulness. And, you know, if you're listening to a piece of music you love, or you look at a piece of artwork and you're completely consumed and absorbed and looking at that. And furthermore, if it goes oh my God, I know exactly what he means, or I know exactly what that piece of art is about in terms of emotion. Even that act of being completely absorbed in something is so mindful and can give your brain a wee bit of a rest, you know, from some of that going round and going round and going round.
There's a lot of people talking about mindfulness these days, Paul, where it's just about this moment right now, and, you know, and then a couple of minutes, this moment that we're sharing now will end, and then we'll go on to our next moment, and it's always like living in this constant present. Not like we have a choice as human beings. I mean, the present is all we have.
Yeah.
Is it helpful, though, to think like that?
Mindfully, I guess it's just, you know, when you get entrapped or writing a poem, it is a moment, like, and whenever it's finished, it's liberation. You know, you are completely liberated. That epiphany that you have at that moment in time will only last for a certain length of a moment, and then you will go back to maybe being in a demonic state again, where things are so caustic and so crude, you know, that you're trying to think, but I had that before, but again, you will have another epiphany again. You shall be liberated again. That's just life. It's death and rebirth, death and rebirth, death and rebirth. You know, that's just the way it goes. You have good moments, you have bad moments, and you have everything in between, but every time that you have those moments, you're always liberated and you'll move on to the next. You know?
Chris, there's some great old phrases in this part of the world. I can't help thinking, listening to Paul there. People talk about mindfulness. I think in this part of the world, we call it head's peace. Do you know what I mean? You sit and you go, this is a great little river. This is a lovely dog. This is a beautiful poem. Do you ever get head's peace yourself, like deep head's peace?
Certainly, I'd agree with Paul in terms of creativity for me. When you're writing, that is mindfulness for me personally. You know, I've read up about mindfulness. Essentially, it's a form of meditation, really, is what it is, you know. It's just not focusing on the whirlwind that is mental illness and try and focus on something that is peaceful, like you say, or positive or beautiful. Look, we're surrounded by the world that is beautiful. If you can focus in on part of that world and and maybe lay off the ruminations or the things that are troubling you and say, look, I'm going to deal with this in 3 hours' time and give it a time. And literally, when the 3 hours is up, you might not be bothered to deal with what was bothering you in the first place. So there's different techniques that you can employ to, you know, to tell the mental illness to just to go away and leave me alone.
Does it feel like that you're talking to a personality within yourself?
Yeah, it is, definitely. Wow. There's a voice there that's in it. It's almost like being bullied, you know? It's like having a constant bully in your head.
I actually wrote a poem called My Mind is Bullying Me.
Yeah.
You know, which was quite a nice one to write. Like, you know, it was someone had said to me, it's like your mind is bullying you, and I thought that was absolutely beautiful because that's really what it is. And yes, you know, it gets really dark and you get really tired and all you want to do is just lie on the sofa and do absolutely nothing, but again, it's like anything. If you ride the storm, there's always calm afterwards, you know. You just have to be willing to go along with the ride and keep going through.
But Paul,
you know,
battling through life can be hard, tough at the best of times, but you're battling through life with a battler inside your own life.
Aye, but I mean, it's exciting, you know, because my friend Jeff, he sent me this beautiful, I can't even mind the name of it, but it's pottery. And what it was ancient pottery that was broken and pieced together with gold. So it was, so after every breakage, it looks even better than what it did originally.